Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Now, some may be screaming, I'm jumping for joy. It's Monday. It's my favorite day of the week. Man, am I glad to be back with you guys. Now, that's not to say we didn't have a wonderful weekend. Now, I had a blast. I had an absolute blast both Saturday night and Sunday night producing our sister programs, All Things Reconsidered last night, and before that, Saturday night, Fourth Estate Radio, All Things Reconsidered with our brother-in-arms, Bruce Birch, and Fourth Estate with John Fox down under in Sydney, Australia, and Bruce Birch there in beautiful, beautiful North Carolina. And a lot of ground covered. All shows are growing by leaps and bounds as this, the Head On Radio Network, gathers speed heading down the runway. I'm excited as can be just to see what we've accomplished in a very short period of time. We have only just recently, Friday, we turned... What? Yeah, 4 months old. 4 months old and already reaching out, not across the nation, but across the globe. That, to me, is amazing, and I owe it all to you guys, frankly. Otherwise, I'd just be sitting here yammering into a vacuum. But you're the ones who make it ever so much fun. And ever so much more meaningful, because we're starting a conversation here. God only knows where it's going to wind up, but we are starting a conversation that this nation has needed, has yearned for decades now. Decades. An opportunity for not ordinary Americans. Don't ever let anybody use that phrase around you again. Ordinary Americans, to describe somebody who works 40, 60, 80 hours a week and carries the good-for-nothing likes of the Bush family that never worked an honest day in their lives. No, sir. There's nothing ordinary about those Americans. Baby, those are extraordinary Americans. You better believe it. So, our goal here is to have a conversation with extraordinary America. And we are succeeding. And a program note, a reminder for you coming up Wednesday night, roughly 15 minutes after the hour, 15 minutes after the top of the show. We're going to be talking with a gentleman by the name of Jeff Biggers, author of a book that I've been talking about at some length lately, The United States of Appalachia. How Southern Mountaineers brought independence, culture, and enlightenment to America. I think you're going to enjoy it if you've read it. God, I sound like some sort of a professor. Be prepared to ask questions. But Jeff will be here, and he will take your questions if you are so inclined. So be ready. Be psyched up. If you've read this book, if you've gotten into this book like I did, you know why I'm so excited about it. And I'm excited to talk to the author just to see, what kind of additional insights. Because for every sentence an author puts into a book, any author with an editor has somebody standing there, with the little China marker going, no, you can't put that in there. No, it's only got to be so long. So I'm sure that we will have added insights from Jeff Biggers when he is when he's with us this Wednesday night. Now, a week from Wednesday night, we're going to have another guest on. to wit, namely, a gentleman by the name of Jim Lardner. He is one of the editors of another wonderful book. This one's not history. This one is in the present tense. And if you read it, it could very well point you in a direction towards saving this country. Jim Lardner is the editor, co-editor of Inequality Matters, The Growing Economic Divide in America and Its Poisonous Consequences. This is the good stuff. So he will be with us on March the 8th. And I believe you will find that interview to be interesting as well. And again, you'll be able to ask any questions that you have a mind to. This Inequality Matters covers a broad spectrum of progressive and liberal thought. Oh, just to share with you some of the contents. Part one, how unequal are we anyway? Well, if you read the New York Times and Paul Krugman's column, you've got a pretty good idea. How unequal are we? Part two, dynamics of inequality. Part three, changing. And this is where we come in. Changing the conversation. No, I'm not in the book or anything. I'm just a poor but honest talk radio host. I'm not quite there yet. But we are changing the conversation, and that is part and parcel of changing America. So all of that is coming. I haven't had a lot of feedback on the issue, but I like, in addition to our conversations with extraordinary Americans, I like to talk to people who are concerned with those extraordinary Americans. You know, the 40 and 60 and 80 hour a week work crowd. The people who are carrying America on their backs with little or no recompense. Now, I mentioned Paul Krugman's column. I believe I do have it here in the stack. Yeah, I do. Just one second. Yeah, there it is. Titled, Graduates Versus Oligarchs. Some stunning, stunning numbers in here. He says, a new research paper by Ian Dew Becker and Robert Gordon of Northwestern University called Where Did the Productivity Growth Go? Gives the details of the growing inequality gap in America. Between 1972 and 2001, the wage and salary income of Americans at the 90th percentile. That means the people, you know, everybody underneath them is making less money. At the 90th percentile of the income distribution, it rose only 34% between 1972 and 2001. Only 34%. That's about 1% a year. So, Krugman notes, being in the top 10% of America, not so much. Wasn't the big ticket. He says, however, but income at the 99th percentile rose 87%. And then there's the gang at the 99.9th percentile. Their wealth grew by 181%. See, sometimes when I do numbers, my eyes roll back in my head and I feel... Do you see the consequences of these kinds of numbers? And then there's the Americans at the 99.99th percentile. Everyone except for 0.1% of America makes less money than them. Their income rose, their wealth grew by 497% between 1972 and 2001. Newsflash. You know how they used to say we were doing class warfare? My friends, that's class warfare. You remember how they used to say that when we would talk about the poor getting poorer and the rich getting richer under the Republicans? Guess what? It's true. It's all true. So then maybe that's a starting place for conversation tonight, and it will certainly be part of our conversation a week from Wednesday night when we talk to Jim Lardner. Is this an America we can tolerate? Is this an America that we want any part of? Or is this an America that is in dire need of change? It's not in, you know, I'll play my little part. You'll play your part. We will all play our parts, I hope. But it's going to take a hell of a lot more than individuals acting individually. I think you get my meaning. So let's take a quick break. A reminder of the phone number, it's 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. This is Head On. I am Bob Kincaid.
Can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her.
Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt US Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
McGruff, the crime dog, here with my nephew Scruff. Get a pencil and write down an important address. It's for the new McGruff comic activity book.
And it's full of me.
The address is...
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Hey, Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Tells you what to do about guns and about bullies and drugs and about strangers who want to give you a ride.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
And it's full of games and puzzles, too. So for your free copy of my new comic activity book, just write...
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
Not bad.
Can I do it again?
One more time.
Scruff, Scruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
You'll be helping me take a bite out of crime.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ag Council.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
You know, the president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday night, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
All righty then. Welcome back. This is Head On. You didn't know we had Led Zeppelin in studio with us tonight, did you? You could actually hear the breathing. I'm Bob Kincaid. Great to have you guys on board Monday night after 2 days of long and weary, well, silence on my part. It's good to have my yap going again. Poor Agnes is over here just having a... She's not... Monday's not so much. Let's go to the phones. David is with us from Nashville. Hey, David, you're Head On.
Well, Bob, did the kittens have crocheted tails? Agnes sounded like she was not having the best little time in the world a few minutes ago.
Trying to cope with a new filing system inside the computer.
Oh, no. Oh, don't do anything to keep your hands off my pixel.
Thank you.
But, of course, we're here to serve and protect.
Exactly.
I don't know if Port Gate is dead yet or not, but...
Don't think so.
Not by my radar, it's not. And I want to try to tie that together with your little lead-in on your economic treatise that those that have can never have enough, and
Right. Those
that don't have should be screwed out of whatever they got. You know, money is kind of this, like, black hole, it's an incurable mass, but it just draws all other monies to it.
Right.
So it just gets sucked in. And this I want to tie together with Portgate. Friday night, you had a very important question, and I didn't hear anybody really offer up an answer. And it was like, well, when did we forget? Why can't we? Why don't we? Why aren't we operating our own port?
And I think it's a fair question.
You're exactly right. And if someone weren't thinking it through, didn't have a business background, for those of you on my webcam, you can see that I'm waving my hand saying I have a business background. Okay, that's a joke. I don't have a webcam. I barely have a computer.
Well, then that tells me I got real problems because I saw you there, David, and I don't have a webcam either.
Kumbaya. Oh, dude, it's a contact high. All right. Bob, we can operate our own port. We can pick our own oranges. We can make our own cars. Those with money don't want to make and do. Before I throw the end of that punchline up here, if you were 30 years old and, or no, let's say you're 25 years old and you've been around a little bit and you've just enrolled in a really wonderful graduate school oriented toward business, and you say that your desire in life is to learn how to manufacture and do and build a big one and all the rest of it, the rest of the class will start snickering, and your professor will say, you should leave the Harvard Business School. You should leave the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. You should leave the University of Chicago. You should go to Mississippi State, get a degree in agriculture, and learn to farm. Nobody at the very highest level wants anything to do with making anything. They want to somehow, with masses of money, get their hands on an enterprise.
Yeah, they're not making anymore. They're finessing. I mean, is that fair?
They're buying and they're selling. They buy, they pump up the value with paint, smoke, and mirrors, and they sell it to the highest bidder. And they will, over a 2 to 4 year time period, make more money than any one of the Dodge brothers, anybody that founded GM, anybody that used to work at GE actually making anything. They will make more money by increasing the apparent value of that entity and enticing somebody else to buy it. You know, there's one...
Well, you remind me, I'm sorry if I may cut you off just for a second, David. That's you're so right, and concrete examples are always beneficial when you're talking about something like you are now. And there is a concrete example of that. And his name is billionaire financier Wilbur Ross Jr. Remember when we talked about old Wilbur Ross?
oh, wait a second, isn't he the guy that's the coal mine buyer and seller?
And before he did that, he did it with American Steel. He took up failing American, you know, classic, you know, the, I mean, heart of America, you know, with the Pittsburgh and the smoke and the Wheeling and Weirton and the great, you know, vats of molten steel tipping on that great hinge and pouring out into the chills and, you know, and all of that. Yeah, when they were ailing, he bought them up, held them for a couple of years.
That's the old companies, like I used to watch on Industry on Parade.
Yeah, exactly. And put the screws to them, busted the unions, and then turned around. I think he sold them to the talk about we can't run our ports. I think he sold them to Pakistan.
Well, of course he did. I knew that steel
that was
on the way.
That was International Steel Group.
In the mid-'80s, Bob, when U.S. Steel, you know the name U.S. Steel.
Oh, yeah.
When they built a West Coast headquarters, they bid the job and they bought the steel for their own West Coast headquarters from a Korean company. And that was 20 years ago. But Dubai, the port of Dubai, in the mid-'80s, when they were trying to step aside from smuggling, money laundering, and who knows, trafficking in white slaves, when they wanted to move beyond that, they invested in a world-class setup to move seagoing containers.
Yeah.
They lost money for several years because they went out and they bought the best equipment, the best people, the best, all of it, and they invested in the future. They lost money for several years. Well, now, because they, like a lot of other people, whether they be Chinese, Danish, English, Japanese, they are willing to invest. American business people that want the big bucks quick refuse to invest.
You're right.
They care about the stock price next quarter. They care about what the Wall Street Journal says about the stock 6 months from now in anticipation of making or losing money. They don't care about investing. All of those people that want to buy our ports, and over 80% of our terminals, 100 or so terminals, are owned by foreigners, and they'll invest. But why? Because they take a longer view. America doesn't care. The get-rich-quick crowd doesn't want to make a better car by design and then build it and then sell it and then service it. They want to somehow, through any enterprise they can find, figure out a way to make a quick buck. So, yes, Bob, America could operate any port if they were allowed, if middle management were allowed to access equipment, people, and procedures, they could do the job. It might take 10 years to turn the kind of profit. The people with the biggest money, the Cheney and the Bushes.
Right.
And those that control Halliburton.
The mountain moving money.
The mountain move. The people that will scrape the top off of a mountain in a heartbeat, never mind that it muddies up, no pun intended, the life of 1,500 people that live in the valley. They don't care.
No.
They can create whatever they want quickly, and to them it's just, oh golly, oh muffy, we need to wait 18 months to make several billion. What shall we do in the meantime?
Well, you know, we've got to answer to our investors. I mean, this is, and you know, you're
the most disgusting phrase in American business.
Yeah, well, it is, and it's an excuse for doing everything on the cheap, everything on the quick, and when you hear Dear Leader talking about this stuff, the small businessman is the backbone of American business. Bug spray. The small businessman is in debt to the big businessman, and the big businessman doesn't give the small businessman a chance to get off the ground before he's swooped over him and eaten him alive.
He'll squash him like bugs under his foot. You know, if 100 small business people, 1,000, let's make it 1,000 small business people from Oklahoma drive their automobiles to Washington, D.C. and ask to speak to anybody that matters because those 1,000 people have been put out of business by Walmart in Oklahoma, they will not get an audience.
Well, you know, consider, if you will, you know, I mentioned Wilbur Ross a minute ago, David. His buddy and erstwhile sometime business partner is a cretin, a creep, a miserable example of an attempt at membership in the human race. And you're familiar with him, by the name of Don Blankenship. Okay.
You're more familiar than I am.
Well, he's getting into the spotlight because he's had full page presence in the Wall Street Journal recently, you know. But he went up to a meeting of one of the Berkeley County, West Virginia Republican Club. Now, Berkeley County is a short train ride from Washington D.C. It's one of those becoming a bedroom community of D.C.
And what he fortunate for your state.
Thank you. but he went up there and he said this. I mean, this is, and you know, this goes hand in glove with what you're talking about. We don't want to make anything except money on the turnaround. We don't want to make it buying or selling. We want to make it on the turnaround, and we don't want to invest anything in our workers, and we don't care about what happens to our workers. In this speech to the Berkeley County Republican Club, Blankenship said that the fire at Arakoma Coal's Alma No. 1 mine and the January explosion at International Coal Group's Sago mine, that they were statistically insignificant. And then he went on to say that the burden of workers' safety falls on the workers themselves, that the company has no responsibility in that process. And you know what? He may be right, but the thing is, he won't let the workers look after themselves. He won't let the union in, because that's what the union is.
Bob, it is impossible, in the absence of a partner on the management side, for a worker to look after themselves. Whether it is a day laborer working for a farmer or 1,000 miners under the ground working for a coal operator. Without cooperation from the owner of the land, owner of the tools of production, if the guy with the hoe in his hand doesn't have the cooperation of the guy in the big house, or I should say the large home as opposed to the big house, that the worker can't do anything by themselves?
Not at all. Not a thing.
You have to have an equation. You have to have a balance. Well, Blankenship says that, and George Bush says, we can write our balance of payment by selling pizza to the Chinese or the Indians, or those of India. I can just imagine a big old sea lamb container, or maybe one of those with a funny oriental name and a red and green alligator on the side full of dominoes headed out.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's going to still be hot when it gets to wherever the heck it's going.
I'm guessing no. You know, remember I bought a DVD for my kids the other day. Just happened to notice that MGM had released all the original. You remember the Pink Panther cartoons?
Yes, I do.
That were pure genius when they were released.
Yeah.
I remember one bit that used to, you know, there'd be the regular cartoons, and then in amongst them, there would be a bit where Pink Panther pizza delivery. And it would show, and then the Pink Panther took a pizza to an Eskimo who had never tried pizza before. And then he goes and takes one to an Arab, and the thing melts coming out of the box. And I used to laugh because that was a funny visual. George Bush last week said that that's our economic model.
Oh, and he probably believes that it is. He's that dumb, he's that removed, he's that ignorant, and he's that malicious.
I don't know. Well, you know, and the next question becomes, you know, and you've raised this issue, you've raised this topic before yourself, David. What do you do about it? That's where we are. This is a place where we come to gripe and complain and carry on, and we laugh a little and we have a little bit of fun. You know, you can't even boycott a guy who doesn't sell anything. You can't boycott Wilbur Ross. You can't boycott Don Blankenship, and they damn well know it.
Oh, exactly. It's got to be done at a federal level.
It has to be done by government.
At some level, and with a company that large and that scattered, with that many tentacles in that many that many states. It's got to be done at the federal level, and that's why the Bushes and the Norquists and the Roves want government dead in the bathtub, so that the fascist corporatists can have their way without any interference, and we will simply be dust under their feet. But we've got to agitate. We've got to make noise. We've got to be seen. We've got to be heard. We have to vote. We have to vote in extraordinary numbers because we've got to overwhelm bad count. We now know...
Overwhelm bad machines?
Anywhere... Well, I meant Diebold. Anywhere there's Diebold, we're going to get screwed. So we've got to vote in such numbers that they can't rig it without just setting off an alarm in every possible way.
It's our only hope. Like I said, you know, we carry on, we complain, we have fun. I get under some people's, you know, I get emails about what a bummer I am. I'm not trying to do that. But dadgummit, okay, so I got a Pink Panther reference out of all this. That's about as funny as it gets.
Did you get a boop on your head?
But I mean, you get my meaning.
A bit of Phyllis Gage?
No, but does this constitute organizing somewhere along the way?
We better be, because if it's just you and I talking on the radio and a few guys nodding their head, you know, Bush will be elected for a third term. Once he, you know, works a little magic with the Supreme Court, he's got the vote.
Okay, now I'm supposed to be the bummer here. Don't help.
I just want to agitate enough that people go, damn it, we got to stop this.
Well, yeah, I mean, well, you live down there where there's a lot more growth than what perhaps I see around here. But I got to thinking about things, this Paul Krugman column talking about the growth of wealth in the 99.99th percentile of the country. And by the way, that annual dollar figure is something on the order of $6 million a year. When you're at 99.99, you're at $6 million a year in America.
That's what you got to be making to get over that, to be in that club.
Yeah, yeah. And but the thing is, if you look at the development going up, you know, all these, you know, McBusinesses. You know, everything's a chain. Nobody opens a new business that's just a standalone anymore. Everybody wants to open a franchise. I in particular, because you know I'm kind of a foodie, and so are you. I noticed that, you know, as I was growing up, you had these family steakhouses, you know, Bonanza, Ponderosa, that kind of stuff. Do you remember those?
Oh, of course.
Have you noticed that they're more or less disappearing? And they're being replaced by the Outbacks and places that, you know, if you took a family of, you know, if you, like what I got, a family of six, you go to Outback, you're out the door at $125, $130, $150.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, down the road, it strikes me that this benighted economic model that we seem to be operating on, well, it kind of relies on a very, very small number of people to support all those businesses. Because, you know, the family that's working, you know, mom and dad go to work every morning, and the kids go to school, and there's daycare to be paid for, and they don't have any health care. Hell, they can't go drop $150 at Outback. You know, it would have been a treat to go to Shoney's.
Oh, it was for me, you know, at the small child era. Of course it was. But I wasn't being bombarded daily with the message over and over and over that you can't do what you did before. You've got to be moving up the ladder. So you have a house that's three times larger than anything you or I saw, especially for me.
Well, that's like when
kids growing up, we never saw houses. But I mean, there was one or two houses in a town of 30,000 the size that you can see 100 of on quarter acre lot.
Yeah. You know, this is, and you know, those quarter acre lots you're talking about, in the time period you're talking about, that was farmland.
Well, of course it was.
I mean, you see it yourself around Nashville. I remember driving through greater Nashville on the way back and forth between Alabama and West Virginia when I was a child, and it was like, Farmland, 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 horse field, horse field, horse field, Nashville. Farmland, farmland, farmland. And the farmland's gone.
If you haven't been through in 3 or 4 years, Bob, it's going to be really, really alarming.
Well, but it's...
You won't recognize Highway 31.
No. I remember when all there was to Highway 31 was Loco Joe's and Crazy Charlie's fireworks stand. I mean, but the thing is, you said I'm going to be alarmed when I see Nashville. I'm alarmed when I see Charlotte.
Oh well. Charlotte.
The last time I was in Atlanta, my God in heaven, I had a little sports car at the time, and I was getting passed by people in like 69 Impalas having their Dale Earnhardt moment on I-285.
The good old days.
Yeah, it's everywhere. I mean, maybe it's not. I mean, maybe this is all. Maybe we're talking about the Southeast here. But you know what? This country cannot sustain that.
You're from that era when it was a cool thing to do with a family on a Sunday afternoon to go once around the perimeter and make it so that you could stop over by Hartsfield and watch planes take off for a while, and then go to the Varsity on the way home. You had a big day.
Yeah, sure. You know, growing up in Alabama, the big trip was maybe a Saturday drive over to Huntsville to the mall. You know, and back then,
at the Rocket.
Yeah, and go to the Space Center. That's gone now. I mean, the Space Center isn't, but that attitude is. Now you take, our 2.3 children or whatever, and, you know, you go to Outback, or, my God, you know, you live in a city with a professional sports team. What would it take to take, I mean, once you factor in the $6 hot dogs and the $9 Cokes, how much would it cost to take that family of six to a Titans game?
Family of six? I don't know anybody that could afford to do that. two people start at about 2.25 to do a Titans game.
Well, you know, for all this talk of family values, David, it seems like they're kind of pricing they're undervaluing or overvaluing or whatever. They're pricing the family out of the values.
Well, and that's their intent. They don't care about people at this level, whether it's educationally, whether it's recreationally, whether it's entertainment-wise. They don't care because they don't know who we are. They don't talk to us. They've never interacted with us. And you're talking to people, you know, that top 0.3% is just horribly disappointed that they're not going to be able to move up to the 0.2% of income for another 2 years. You know,
what are they doing? I mean, I don't mean to sound just completely ignorant, David, but you know, I was up in I think I've mentioned this before. Played a round of golf last spring, maybe. Yeah, it was last spring, up in Morgantown, West Virginia, home of my beloved alma mater, West Virginia University. I went to the golf course out on the lake out there. The last time I'd played it was 10 years ago. It was all trees, it was forests, and you know, it was gorgeous. And it's McMansions now.
Yeah.
And I mean, we're talking about Morgantown, West Virginia. There's nobody there that's doing anything that makes that kind of money. You know, this creepy little right-wing news site that somebody signed me up for, Newsmax.com, even these freaks are beginning to lose it. I saw a story today that said, ominous signs ahead, housing sales slow in January, could be the beginning of the housing bubble burst. Who's going to be able to pay those mortgages when the crap really honest to God hits the fan, David?
Well, that's one of the things that's given rise to the McMansion is that mortgage lenders have been allowed to reinvent themselves. There are loans out there that if you as a husband are making in some, let's take Nashville, the two of you together have $120,000 income. And that's, if you're 35 and you've got both the man and the wife have a college degree in a city like Nashville, if you're a good interview, the two of you can pull down $120,000 a year. You sit down in front of a mortgage lender, and they're going to, the first thing they're going to talk to you about is one of the greatest economic financial traps going. The interest-only mortgage loan. I can put you in an $800,000 house today.
And all you got to do is keep up with the interest.
All you're doing is keeping up with the interest. Or there are mortgage loans that are based on the fact that real estate values are going up and innuendo, they'll never go down.
And you're going to turn that around because, you know, you're going to want to move up into a better house in a little while, and you'll turn this around, you know, you'll double your money.
Well, all of those.
But it comes back to what we were talking about to begin with, David. Nobody in Nashville's making anything.
But they're making enough to be pulled into those tricks. If real estate values stabilize, if rather than go up, if these things rather than go up every year, if a $300,000 house was worth $300,000 for 3 years in a row, there would be economic ruin in Davidson County. If housing values would simply become stagnant.
And let me guess, you've got Republican leadership in Davidson County, right?
Actually, it's kind of. We've got a Democrat here and there.
But they've all bought into the siren song of growth.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, and speaking of siren song, that's this Marsha Blackburn woman that is just evil as evil can be.
Oh, that congresswoman?
Yeah, yeah. She's in the House of Representatives. I heard her this morning talking about the farmers have to do their part because, well, they just need to understand we need to balance the budget. So, the family dairy farm is going to go by the wayside. The guy that runs less than 200 head of cattle, he's going to be screwed, all because these various programs are going to be axed in favor of the corporate farm and the fact that the guy that's in that top 2%, 0.2%, 0.3%, 0.1% wants more tax cut. And she says, hey, you know, the farmer's just going to have to do what they need to do because the budget needs to be balanced. So she might have some very angry farmers chasing her.
With the pitchforks and the torches, with any luck at all. With any luck at all. David, thanks so much. We got to hit it,
I think I've beaten the living daylights out of a break.
No. Please. That's the kind of stuff we can let slide. But, you know, when we talk about grand schemes like the 99.99th percentile, like I said, it makes my eyes roll back in my head. It means nothing. It's when we can draw it down to you know, not figures, but folks.
So what's the population of America these days? 300 million?
280 maybe.
No. Let's say 300 million because I can do the math easier.
Okay.
That means George Bush is running America for the benefit of 300,000 people and the rest of us can go straight to hell.
Okay, see, you did it again. God, I love it when you do. That's
well,
yeah.
I had to take a stab at boiling it down.
Okay, give me a city of 300,000.
City only?
Yeah, sure.
Knoxville, Tennessee.
How apropos, considering his relationship with the former mayor thereof. Okay, so America can go to hell for Knoxville.
You got it.
Jeez.
Because they make enough money to matter. George Bush.
But it ain't just George, David.
It's Dick. It's Carl. It's Grover. It's Halliburton.
It's Wilbur Ross. It's Don Blankenship.
Bill Frist. Please don't forget the cat killer.
Hey, David, you have yourself a great night. Thanks so much.
Good night, Bob.
Good night. And rolling right along to our buddy... Yeah, let's keep rolling. Rick from Panama City, Florida. Hey, Rick, how you doing?
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm trying to get my head around this stuff that David was talking about.
Well, David's a great call. He really is. I just want to warn you and all the callers. I have changed my meds, and I'm now taking an oral morphine. So if things get a little strange, that'll be the reason why.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay.
No, it doesn't sound good. That's kind of flippant on my part.
Well, I just wanted to warn everybody if I start slurring everything. But Look, there's a lot of things to cover. First off, I want to respond to David's call and what you said. You know, Americans aren't making anything. The one thing that always gets overlooked are the one things that Americans always make in relation to the rest of the world is that we make money. And what has been happening is that it has not been shoveled into our banks, into our own economy, into savings and the alike. It's being shoveled outside the economy. And that is causing us to all go dirt poor.
Well, yeah, what was that number that was out a week or so ago, Rick, that American savings are...
It's negative.
Yeah, it's negative. It's down below levels that are, you know, around the time of the Great Depression.
Exactly. And so that's what we're making, and we're still able to do that because of all the different weird usuries and financial, criminal activities that we have here in our banking industry ever since Reagan, where usury and robbing banks became legal. And so that what we're able to do is revolve money constantly, and by changing the interest rate, you actually gain a little bit, which is, it's not real, but it looks so on paper. And then you turn around and you shovel it again outside the country. So basically what Americans make is money, and we've been shoveling it outside the country for the past 25 years into everything else without ever having a product to export ourselves in importing everything.
But again, with that dude that I wanted to sit down in the chair, I think it was Friday night, and, you know, just hand him a case of 10W40 and say, start drinking, buddy. You know, you can't, we do, we make money, but you can't eat it.
No, you can't eat it, but you can buy food with it. See, that's
well, as long as there's any confidence, I mean, I'm not trying to get all highfalutin and international banking conspiracy or anything,
but as long as
there's confidence in that currency.
That's right. And there's plenty of confidence in the currency right now because we are, once Nixon took us off the gold standard, and he went over to China and made his little deal, and then everybody else followed up. And we start then from turning on a fiat concept till we finally got to ones and O's, until we finally got to asset management economy. We got away from a value added economy, and now what we're doing is we're turning over our assets, so like Alaska, for instance, all of our oil
is
off to pay debt, and we're doing that all around the country now. And that's what this whole port scandal is about. It's about asset management to pay off debt. And a lot of people haven't looked over there, but if you take a good look, you'll see it. Essentially what we've done is we've mortgaged very large parts of America to be able to turn around and pay the debt that we've incurred by borrowing money. Actually, we're just basically offsetting the interest.
Well, exactly. On a national basis, Rick, we've gotten suckered into that mortgage deal that David was talking about with the 35-year-old couple in Davidson County. You know, all you got to do is maintain the interest.
That's right. Exactly. I mean,
because nobody's ever going to call that principal due.
It's everywhere. I mean, we have an Air Force base here. It's called Tyndall Air Force Base. And surrounded by all access points of the Air Force Base, if you go into Mexico Beach or if you go into Panama City, you'll find a paycheck loan office.
Oh, yeah.
Turn around and give them an advance on their paychecks for 14, 15 days, and then turn around and charge them anywhere from $35 to $500, depending on who you sign up with, to cover that money. So that's what we turn into. So that's what we're making. And the money that we're making used to go into savings, used to go into internal investment and infrastructure. We don't do that anymore. We take all this money that we make, that's what we make, and we ship it outside the borders. I mean, it belies the concept of two very primary economic concepts. That is, if number one, you can't do business with people who don't have any money. That's one, right? And then the other one is, if you spend your money here, you'll spend it again, and you delay that. So this.
Well, and you're so right, Rick. And what it does is it puts the lie to so much of this Republican, and George H.W. Bush at least one time in his life was right when he called it voodoo economics, and it extends to everything he did and everything his son is doing too, because this miracle of the 401k. Remember, you're going to be in charge of your own money. It's not, them nasty unions can't go out there and build them no casinos in Las Vegas. You know what? Those casinos yielded a pretty damn nice return return on those pension monies.
Yes, they did, but I wish I could say this was a Republican problem. This is indeed a two-party problem.
It is a two-party problem, but it's the Republicans, Rick, that are out there talking about the glories of it. You know, everybody, you know, to hear them talk, everybody's got a 401k, and everybody's got, you know, because if your 401k is all snugged up, then you've got money to be putting money into one of these health care savings accounts that Dear Leader was pushing at Wendy's a couple of weeks ago.
Well, yeah, but I mean, all you have to do is look around. I mean, Clinton, he was the guy that signed off on all the NAFTA and GATT proposals. You take a look at the fellow from Delaware, Mr. I am so beautiful and I'm a real tough guy. What's his name again? That creepy guy from Delaware that's a Democratic senator. I mean, just look at all these people who signed off on the exporting of America, and you can see that it's not an issue of Democrat or Republican, because there's plenty of Republicans or Democrats that disagree with it. As a matter of fact, most favored nation status, we rallied. We worked our butts off, that's what I'll say, to stop most favored nation status for China. And there was like 78 to 82% of us that had written in and said, we don't want it. Congress, the Senate, and Mr. Clinton told us, well, too bad, you're going to get it.
Yeah, well, that's true. And frankly, we're going to have to rely on countries outside the borders of the United States if we're going to stop any of the negative impacts of this CAFTA foolishness.
Venezuela's with us on it.
Yeah.
Venezuela's with us, and I do believe that there will be others. You can't.
Well, there's a so-called leftist, whatever the hell that means anymore.
A leftist means for the people, by the people, and honoring their constitution.
That's kind of what I've come to the conclusion of. There's a leftist running for president in Costa Rica. Where we've got some friends, some listeners to the program, and he has said that he will move heaven and earth to stop CAFTA within Costa Rica itself, because he says it will destroy Costa Rica's farmers, and it will.
Well, it certainly will. I mean, there's nothing good about. See, a lot of people don't understand, and you know this, and a lot of your listeners know this, but for the newbie that may not know, I'll just go on and say this: free trade is a wonderful thing, if you make a cheese, a wine, an automobile, or something that I can't make here.
Right.
Then I want your product. But if I can make it here, there should be a tariff to protect this country's worker. Just like there should be a tariff in every other country to protect their worker. If you don't protect your worker, you do not protect your infrastructure. You do not build a middle class. You end up with nothing more than an elitist class, and everybody else is poor, and that does nobody any good except if you want to spawn famine.
And you sell your soul in the process, if we can get into the metaphysical at all, Rick.
Oh, absolutely.
A story just yesterday or the day before, another sweatshop in, I think, Bangladesh collapsed.
Yeah, I mean,
and the people inside, it was all women. It was a sweater factory. They were probably bound for Walmart, you know, or Target or Kmart or Sears or, you know.
Do you remember the opening of the first Walmart in China? Does anybody remember it? They had little itty bitty shopping carts because the people had no money. Now look it up. Go on Google and look up what I'm telling you. They had little itty-bitty shopping carts to hold very little because they had no purchasing power. That has not changed until now, when they are becoming a superpower by all the money that you have been shoveling out. All of us have been shoveling out for all these cheap Chinese goods. The fact that we do not invest at home, they are now buying the big cars. Their shopping carts are getting bigger, and ours will be getting smaller. It just is a fundamental part of economics. Those who have will get, and those who don't, won't. And there's no changing that. I do need to address something, though, Bob.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Let me put you on hold. Let me just carry you through the break. And
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. No problem, Rick. Stand by. And we are going to take our top break, and when we come back, this is Conversation Radio. This is what I'm getting at. We're all of us every bit as smart as the geniuses who think they're, you know, we know better. Bug spray. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I got the picture of me and you. You wrote, I love you. I will be too. I see the spirit and the something up with you.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All righty then, let's do the second hour, 6 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid, this is Head On. If you want to get in touch with the program, get involved with the discussion, the debate, if you will. The phone number is 877-443-2366. Oddly enough, that spells 877, the number 4, head on. make use of it if you wish. An email from our buddy Andrew. Andrew says, hello, hope all's well. Bob, I feel that the American public has to really shake the government and politicians are all corrupt statement. We got to shake that. My argument to them is, you are the government. You pay the taxes to turn the lights on in Congress and the White House. Politicians represent the American citizens. You have to cease the government doesn't represent me thinking, because you represent government every time you pay taxes. He says, P.S., give a hello from me to Bob in North Dakota. I find myself rewinding his segments. Thanks, Andrew. And you're so right, because all of this only happens, this corporate frenzy, it only happens when we say, well, you know, government is them, it's not us. You know, and that's a lazy man's approach. It, honest to God, is. It's a lazy man's approach. Well, it's a vassal's approach. It's a subject's approach to the short little time that we have that we call life. You know, I was trying to find it during the break. When David was talking, we'll go back to Rick in just a second here. When David was talking about how U.S. Steel built its West Coast headquarters out of steel that they bought from Korea instead of, you know, from themselves, I was reminded of an E.E. Cummings poem, and I can't remember exactly which poem it is, but there's a line in it. You know, one of you erudite folks will know. But there's a line in it where it says, you know, but it took an old piece of the Fifth Avenue L between his eyes to get his attention, or something like that. Because, you know, there have been other times in America when we have sold off our birthright, and it has bitten us in the ass every time. If we were called upon to wage a real war, not one of these phony little made-up pieces of garbage like what George Bush has going in Iraq, If we had to wage a real war, guess what? Well, first of all, being a Republican, he would do everything in his power to surrender. Because, I mean, you want to talk about your cheese-eating surrender monkeys. A Republican will not fight anything even remotely half its size, and even then can't win. Can't win. Not that you deserve to win a war that you start yourself. Hell no. Let's go back to the phones. Rick is still with us. Hey, Rick, you're head on. Thanks for waiting through the break.
Oh, my pleasure, Bob, and I appreciate you holding me over. I just want to make a comment that was out of sync with what I was going to talk about. Just remember the import, about the import. Those are jobs that Americans just won't do. Let's not forget we went from pickers. I mean, Americans won't pick vegetables or fruit till we went to roofers and sheetrockers and shinglers, and Americans won't do them either. And apparently, they won't take care of ports either. So keep that in mind about the ports.
Well, right, you know, and don't think that there's not some union busting going on in all of this too.
Oh, how I know it! How I know it!
And that's the thing. And the longer this thing spreads out, it's always six ports. It's New York. It's Newark. It's Baltimore. It's Philly. It's Miami. It's New Orleans. Now it's 21.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that can't see how filthy that rotten deal is deserves to be in a mental hospital. Here's what I want to do. I want to address your black listeners, because I know you have a lot of them.
Okay.
And you folks need to pay attention to something, because something's coming at you that's specifically targeted to you, the black American.
Okay.
And I want to bring it up. And I was going to send this to Bob earlier so he could deal with it himself, but then I took this new medicine and I fell asleep. Okay. It's black people, hide your wallets. America's first black billionaire, Robert Johnson, founder of the Black Entertainment Television Network, has teamed up with the Carlyle Group.
No.
Yes, to pick your pockets.
The Carlyle Group?
The Carlyle Group. Johnson has started a financial corporation that will target black people and their money. Here's what I think the plan is. One of the key problems with the black Americans today is you folks have too much money. We all know money is power. It buys power, and it gives influence to those who have it. If you don't have any money, then you can't organize. You can't march. You can't lobby. I believe this deadly combination between Johnson and the Carlyle Group will invest black people's money, let it grow for a time, and then when the time is right, kill the fund.
What is it? I mean, flesh it out a little bit, Rick.
Well, it's hard to flesh out without... I've given you a link. I'm going to mail it to you. I hope you're going to follow up.
Okay.
The thing of it is that he has already bought all these hotels, and he's in bed with the Carlyle Group and the Bushes and everybody. And now he's going to target specifically black folks' money. There's not any way to flush it out farther than that. He came on Good Morning America or the Today Show, one of those shows, and talked, and they did a featurette on him. And he was talking about this is the next step to create a platform for black Americans. It sounds beautiful. It sounds great.
Empowering, even.
Yes. But the fact that he has lined up with the Carlyle Group tells me the whole deal is hanky.
Well, and it's the Carlyle Group. Somebody going to die.
Well, not only is someone going to die, let's not forget that Bush don't care about black people. And this is just one of these things that they put across in the TV waves and the radio waves, and they try to stoke it up and turn people into just natural-born suckers. I mean, anybody would take a chance on this deal, even if it was signed on a stack of Bibles 10 feet tall, is crazy. I am so sorry, Afro-Americans, that you are once again a target by this government, but you are. They want your money. They want your capital.
40 acres and a mule.
Pardon me?
40 acres and a mule.
That's right. But even more so, they want to seize the capital that they have, pick their pockets, then crash this fund so that the managers of this fund can walk away and buy all this stuff with pennies on a dollar.
Now, a Bush would never do anything like that, Rick, would they?
Yes.
I mean,
A politician, you mean.
Well, a Bush crony would never do anything like that. I mean, Ken Lay's got a little trial going on right now where he's trying to show that, well, heck no, he really didn't crash that entire, that entire corporation and its entire phony, dummied up, ginned up, pension plan that was based on nothing but hokum stocks.
Well, then I recommend all your listeners watch a movie. You can get it at Netflix.com called The Smartest Guys in the Room.
Yeah.
Just go ahead and watch that, how prepared they were to steal from everybody in California. And then how it all turned out to be nothing more than to get rid of Governor Gray Davis and then institute a Republican through this ISA, this car thief, and then turn around and steal the Electoral College votes in 2008. That's how far they looked out. They weren't even looking for 2004. It was about 2008. That's why California is the big target for the Republican Party. They stole Florida, they stole Ohio, and now the next time will be to steal California.
Oh, well, is that going to be our next big swing state in 2008?
Yes, watch for it. Another thing.
Yeah.
In a local newspaper in a little upstate New York town, it's called the Saratogian from Saratoga Springs, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Two headlines side by side on the front page of their local newspaper. First, on the left side, Mammoth City Building going up, billions being about to be spent. The others are, millions. And on the opposite side, it says, hunger growing in the area, soup kitchens doing a booming business.
Yeah, I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yeah, with more people in soup kitchens than any time in recent memory.
9%. Up 9% in that one little county alone. And here is a town that was desperate for tourism trade and that has none ever since 2001.
Right.
Because it's only 180 miles from New York City. This is a representative statement across the board all throughout the country. All the little towns are feeling this.
Well, sure they are. Everybody, George Bush, he cut my taxes. You know, but your state taxes are going up because the federal money's not there that, the rest of America was paying and helping. You know, that's what blows my mind about a state like West Virginia, Rick. You know, we got a pretty sizable chunk of federal money, and yet you've got knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing, absolute morons walking around here going, I want another tax cut, even though they never got one in the first place.
That's the funniest thing about it. All of my kids, and I'm happy and proud to say not one of them makes under $25,000 a year. He's the lowest, and I've got one that's about to crack $100,000. And I got news to tell you. They're not eligible for any of these tax cuts because until you get up above $120,000, you don't start feeling it. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
You don't start feeling it. You might have a mortgage tax that's left over. You might have something else, but they're trying to get rid of that. I mean, my sons and daughters and nephews and grandchildren work hard, and they're not feeling it yet, and they're making some good money. So I don't know who's getting the benefit of all this, but it's got to be somebody that's cracking above $100,000.
Well, I mean, if Paul Krugman's numbers are to be believed, Rick, it's that 99.99th percentile, and those dudes are doing $6 million a year.
Yeah, yeah, well.
I mean, that's where the living is good.
Yeah, well, your tolls have gone up, your gas has gone up, your property taxes and school taxes have gone up. Everything has gone up across the board. You can't even buy a fishing license without taking out a mortgage. I mean, for Pete's sakes, there's nothing left for the working guy, or doesn't matter if you're blue collar or white collar. Everybody's paying until you get up to that certain amount where all of a sudden, magically, you're exempt. And that takes about $1 million or $2 million or whatever it takes nowadays
to
even get in the club.
I know.
Bob, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Rick. I really believe we're reinventing something here.
We are. And this show is going to grow so big and so fat. I mean, things are going to turn around, and boy, are you going to be one of the voices that's out there. And anything I can do to get you up there, I'll do.
Well, I appreciate it.
All right.
You just being there and, you know, be careful with the medicine, will you?
Oh, yeah, I'm taking it the way they say. Believe me, I wouldn't want any more than what they tell me.
Yeah, no crunching it up for the refreshing burst of flavor either, Rick.
What, the morphine blip?
Take care. Bye now.
Hello to everybody, and see you, and good night.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.
Now. Okay, and rolling on, our buddy Andrew from New York. Hey, Andrew, you're head on.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good.
That's good. My father always had an old saying. He said, if you can't pay one, you can't pay two. And as far as the Carlyle Group, you know, if they're trying to focus on getting, you know, black America's money to invest, they must going to be going for the upper, you know, the upper crust, because I can tell you from right down here, nobody down here has any money.
Well, you know, the thing is that no matter how little money there is, though, Andrew, there's always a scheme to get it.
I know.
I can't remember the guy's name. He was the initial owner of the Atlanta Falcons, and he made his fortune marching through the black neighborhoods in Atlanta, mm-hmm. taking a nickel a week on burial policies, and became a billionaire in the process. You know, that's the thing. What these guys are good at is figuring out where you think, you know, where you think there's no money.
Yep.
There's money. And yep. they'll take it, whether they take it a penny, a nickel, a dime, or a dollar.
Yeah, you're right. They will take it in increments of 1 cent.
Sure they will.
But I still say that in this economy now, it's like there's even less for them to get.
Well, I hope that... I mean, this is not the first con to come down the pike to aim at the black community. And you know, I'm hoping the black community's got a little bit more foresight, you know, having been down this road before.
Well, the people that I talk to, they know what's going on, and you know, it's hard for them to fall for a scam. But you got a lot of people out here that, you know, you take it all the money that you can call on your cell phone, like you can dial up a joke on your cell phone for what? You know, that's just giving somebody what? A dollar, so you can get some cruddy joke on yourself.
Oh, I'm
buy it up all the time.
Andrew, I never cease to be amazed. There are television ads running. Dial, you know, text, you know, number, 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 joke. Yeah. And it's the funniest thing you ever heard. And there are, obviously, they wouldn't be able to run those ads if they weren't stinking rich doing it.
Because you see those ads all the time. I'm like, they're spending a lot of money on these ads.
Mm-hmm.
So they must be making a lot.
I mean, yeah, they're making a ton of it. It's something. You know, one of these, I don't know, maybe there's a book in me somewhere down the road, but I gotta pull it together and focus because, you know, I looked, my dad and I were watching TV a little bit earlier today, mm-hmm. and that one, the little animated lizard comes on, you know, that's selling insurance. I love that commercial where he's telling the other lizard that licks his eyeball. Yeah, he says, you know, I'll stay away from the cheesy stuff. It might be off-putting. You know, and it's just, it's charming and it's, I ain't buying their insurance.
No.
Because I'm trying to keep my eyes open to it. I'm trying to be alert to it. But, you know, for every one of us who's trying to keep our eyes open and be alert, Andrew, there's a thousand who are going, I bet that'd be a better kind of insurance because they got a lizard.
Yeah. I mean, just because they got that cute lizard and they said they can beat anybody's price, I'm going to go with it.
Yeah. You know? It's a
con. Without researching it, without doing anything. Just like, I don't know.
Well, you know,
lowest price. I don't care if I don't have any coverage. Just give me the lowest price.
Yeah, right. You know, and you know, here in West Virginia, we got a screw job put across on us last year, so that we can't sue our insurance company anymore. You know, you pay $1,200 a year for, you know, some kind of coverage, and you have a wreck and you call. Oh, we don't pay that. Did you not read that exclusion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's always exclusions.
Well, it's astonishing, and you know, I love what you said there about, you know, this business of you know, there's the them approach to government.
Yeah, yeah, they think like Americans think that the government is something that's separate from them, but the government is to represent them, and that's what when people say, well, the government has always been corrupt, Democrats, Republicans, all of them, they're all corrupt. That's just the nature of the beast. And I'm like, well, then you're saying that's the nature of you because they're supposed to represent you.
Yeah, so much of our past is, you know, we treat it as some sort of venerable something that's not it's not the real life that's down in the dirt with us. But we, you know, the guys who wrote We the People, who used that phrase, you know, they were what they were. They were men of limitations and certainly mm-hmm. fallible.
Yeah, they had defaults,
but,
like everybody
but they took
does.
It. They thought that was a notion worth starting with.
Yeah.
We the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that we were going to be, because that was so novel, you know, we're not going to have a king.
Yes, and that left for expansion for what we have today.
Yeah,
right,
so,
now.
And you know, all of this started, I remember Ronald Reagan ran against Gerald Ford for the 1976 Republican presidential nomination, and that's when that crap started, we need to get government off your backs.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
I'm going to get myself off my back. Okay.
Well, and it's not just that. But you know, that played really well because any time you can make an otherwise comfortable people feel like they're put upon,
mm-hmm.
and that they're somehow persecuted, Andrew, then you know they feel like, you know, they're a little bit more heroic and they're really involved in the fight. So suddenly you got these, you know, you got these dudes, you know, who are back then, you know, one wage earner households doing okay, but Ronald Reagan waved a flag and waved the bloody shirt and said, we're going to get government off your back. And suddenly Joe Sixpack's going, Eileen, did you know government was on our back? I don't want no government on my back. You know, what a bunch of dumbasses.
Oh, man.
That's where it started. Government was never... Government's not on the middle class's back. Government's not on the lower class's back, Andrew. The only place that government was on anybody's back was on the back that it deserved and was supposed to be on in the first place. The corporate polluters.
Yeah.
You know, that 99.99th percentile. Yeah. Those dudes can pay some taxes.
And could pay taxes and wouldn't even feel it.
Yeah.
Not even feel it.
No, not at all. I mean,
it'd be just like me dropping a dollar bill somewhere or whatever, or probably a penny.
Yeah,
actually.
I saw a study somewhere one time that said it is no longer economically viable to bend down and pick up a penny. It costs you more as an average human being to pick up a penny on the ground than it does to just keep walking.
Especially if your back is a little bit suspect too.
Ain't that the truth? That's the truth. But, you know, you've got the right idea, but and so I hope you can talk that wherever you go. If you hear somebody talk about, you know, the government they, stop them in their tracks, Andrew, and say, no, it ain't the government they, it's the government we.
Yes, exactly. It's you. They're supposed to represent you, and you should, you know, if you want them to be a representative of you, and if you try to be a law-abiding citizen and, you know, you're trying to live your life day to day, going to work every day, well, that's what you want representing in your government.
Yeah.
Not some fat cat sitting in a corner office, you know, watching the stock ticker.
Exactly.
So, That's all I had to call up and say, Bob.
Well, I appreciate it, Andrew. It's always great talking with you.
Yep, great talking to you, too.
Have a good evening.
Yep, you too.
Bye now.
Bye.
And rolling on to our good friend Peter in Tallahassee. Hey, Peter, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, such good calls this evening, such good calls. And I don't have much, but I just had to chime in on a couple of things. You know, Rick in Panama City is such a great caller. And at some point during his conversation, there was the reference, of course, to the Carlyle Group and stepping on the backs of the poor. And I think soup kitchens came up in that conversation. And what the reason I called, well, two reasons, but the last week on NPR, there was a segment where they NPR went and interviewed people who were standing in line at soup kitchens in some of the major cities. And there were a huge number of people, and this was during the middle of the day, during the week, there were a huge number of people there who were on their lunch breaks from work. These people are working and having to go to a soup kitchen to eat. That's how bad it's gotten.
Yeah, and you know we've come up with a comfortable term for them, Peter. They're the working poor.
Yes, it's so damn generic. It just makes me feel so much better about it. And the other thing that rang my bell, I just had to chime in on too, was you're talking about the insurance companies that are preying on the poor for, you know, a nickel policy, this sort of thing. Now I have a little firsthand experience with that. I've never worked for a company like that, but I'm aware of people who have. And they ran things in the South down these long, winding dirt roads to the various shacks and shanties and the very poverty-stricken poor. And these insurance agents would run what they called a debit or a route. And they would collect, you know, 35 cents, 45 cents, whatever, some small amount every week.
Yeah.
You wonder how they're making any money on these people. But what happens is, over many, many years of these people paying and paying for, you know, the various members in the family, what they end up doing is paying $1,500, $2,000, $3,000 for a life insurance policy with a face value of $500.
Right, right. And
that's exactly how they're pulling it off, and they don't realize it at 35 cents a week. They don't get, you know, they don't add it up. And
right, and you know, as long and that was the way it was calculated, Peter, as long as it didn't hurt.
Right, yeah, as long as it doesn't hurt. And they would hand out these, you know, the little things they would give them, calendars with Martin Luther King on them,
mm-hmm.
and calendars with Jesus on them. And there would be a little envelope, you know, that would be put, you know, that would be packed up by the door where they would, you know, put the change in during the week but you know, that a small amount of money every week over a long period of time, and it was enough money to send people out to collect it. I mean,
sure it was.
Pay these people, and still, and you know, and this takes a long time to rake in that, you know, the $3,000 over a $5,000 face value policy. It takes a long time to do it, but hell, these people have money; they can wait. Do you think they're in a hurry to screw you?
No, no, they like the slow, comfortable screw.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Agnes, play Slow Ride. I'm sorry, I can't help myself. you know, I just didn't have much night.
No, but you're so right in everything that you say, Peter. And these, you know, I read this Krugman column today, and, you know, we had the ports thing, and there's other news stories out there. But I read this Krugman column, and it's titled Graduates versus Oligarchs, and his theme is that, you know, his theme is that, you know, the old model of, you know, go to school, get your college diploma, you'll get a good job, you'll be okay, and the evidence doesn't even bear that out in America anymore.
Well, you know it doesn't, and you know, I saw that article today, Bob. I somehow, some mailing list or another, but I didn't read the darn thing, and now I'm going to go back and read it. It makes perfect sense.
Well, Rick just phoned in real quick to say, you're right, Peter. The doggies get it.
Doggies get it?
Yeah. But all of this stuff comes together. You know how it is? I think there's a scientific rule, Peter, that says once you get a magazine in the mail, it's almost impossible to get rid of. I mean, you know how old magazines will stack up around the house? Well, this is one from a year or so ago. I think it's a van. What was this? Vogue? Was this Vogue?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. This is from a segment in Vogue magazine, Peter, called Need It Now.
Oh, it sounds pretty like something like Self magazine and all these, you know.
This is obscene, and it dovetails with something else. I got an email the other day from a listener with photographs, I may have even mentioned it on the air, of the home of, well, he's dead now, but the last exalted grand poobah of the United Arab Emirates. Huge place, you know, a couple of, and they had his fleet of cars out. They were all white except for a couple of black ones. It was all Bentleys and Rolls's and Beamers and one solid silver. And I don't mean in color. You know how they write on the police report, one car blue in color?
No. Oh, yeah.
One solid silver Audi A8. Just incredible. And all of this, you know, this just conspicuous consumption. And then Agnes hands me this thing from Vogue. It says, a myth-ridden lake called Fundudzi lies in South Africa's Limpopo province. The region's people, the Vavenda, believe its waters are guarded by a supernatural white crocodile to whom they sacrifice each season's first fruits and crops. All very mystical and intriguing, this legend of the albino crocodile who must be appeased, especially when we see the purest white of summer's croc accessories. A VBH shopping clutch gives off a yada yada yada.
Oh, no, Bob, You're killing me. You're hurting me.
Yeah, VBH purse, $6,990.
Oh, from how many times did the word white come up in that?
Yeah, well, and from Todd's, $14,000. A Luella clutch, $2,850. A Valextra bag, shoulder bag, $8,700. I don't want to know the people who buy those things.
Valextra sounds like a good name for a drag queen. Valextra.
But, you know, the same people that need solid silver Audi A8s need white crocodile bags.
Oh.
You know, and you know, I remember, you know, we talk religion stuff from time to time, Peter.
True.
And I remember that, you know, the who was it? Judas Thomas wanted to give the money that they had to, or sell the ointment to the poor, and Jesus said, the poor you have always with you. And that's, you know, that has always been the rich's excuse. That's the only verse in the New Testament that the rich are aware of. Well, you know, Jesus said, the poor you have always with you. I've even heard Rush Limbaugh use that one.
Well, yes, it's true, but it was a singular incident that was referring to about what was it, about anointing Jesus with oil or perfume, and it was a singular incident. It didn't discount any, it didn't undo any of the other statements about helping the poor. It was,
well, Kurt Vonnegut, Kurt Vonnegut says that's the only joke that Jesus ever tells.
What a great line. I love that.
The poor you've got always with you. whenever I see $8,000 purses, I wonder if, you know, because I'm, well, you know, the poor you've got, but you know, damn, Peter, a $14,000 purse?
Oh, it's amazing, and it would go so well with Condi shoes.
Well, that's like these guys that I used to know back in my hunting days. They would buy these rifles and these shotguns that were $15,000, and they didn't even dare take them in the woods for fear that they'd scratch the stock.
Oh my, yeah, that's like the huge trucks you see in town that don't have a scratch on them, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the pickup truck ain't worth a damn unless it's got a couple of dents on it, and the bumper's a little off kilter.
Absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely. And a couple of Castrol stickers on it.
That's right.
Peter.
Yes, ma'am.
The one thing that I asked Bob is I looked at these purses and, you know, I said, how many food pantries could that stock?
Well, that's a very good point.
Or,
who would it hurt to not own a Valextra drag queen purse?
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I don't think that any of these women could be mommies because I have Blissex that has melted in the bottom of my purse. You know, it's eaten
holes. And that stuff goes through the leather, you know. I mean,
I have everything in my purse, and I look at these, and I think, you know.
Yeah. Agnes, the only thing that goes is in these purses is an American Express card.
Exactly, and I'm sorry, the gold. Oh, no, I'm sorry, it's not gold, it's platinum, isn't it?
Exactly.
I just can't see. It's, oh, it's degrading.
It is degrading.
To think.
And, oh, yeah, and Rick, before I forget it, it took me a second to get that about dogs getting it. I know exactly what you're referring to now, and yes, dogs get it.
Dogs get it.
Thank you for.
All right, we're a little behind for our break, but thanks for everything, Peter.
Okay, I love you guys. Thanks for letting me chime in.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you. Take
care.
See
you later.
Later.
Bye.
Okay, let's do take a little break. Wow, I never cease to be amazed. This is just so much fun. This is so cool. And it's energizing. It's what's that old Serbian word?
Emboldening.
It's an emboldening. That's right. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Understanding.
Treat me with respect.
Drug and alcohol addiction is an equal opportunity disease.
Treat me without judgment.
Individuals in recovery come from all walks of life and deserve to be treated with respect for winning one of the hardest battles there is.
Treat me with courtesy.
Treat me with humanity.
Alcohol and drug addiction deserves proper treatment. For drug and alcohol information and treatment referral, call 1-800-662-HELP.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go?
So if you believe in that God, and if you believe in those spiritual tenets, as 80% of these people that I just read in this poll supposedly say they believe in them, you know, is that fantasy world, or is that real world? I mean, if they really believe in those tenets, if they really believe in that religion, if they really believe in that Christ, then why do we have a war going on? And why do we have people starving? And why do we have people homeless? And why do we have, you know, all of this injustice in society? And why are African Americans killed at three times the rate of white Americans in our prisons in execution chairs? I'll tell you why. Because we have a long way to go to make this society an equitable one. We have a long way to go to create the kind of society that our spiritual principles tell us we need to have. Hey, this is Bruce Birch, and I'd like to invite you to join me each and every Sunday evening at 10 p.m. Eastern for All Things Reconsidered, the weekly program that takes a progressive look at the week in politics. For connection information and archives of all of my shows, point your browser to allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
I think it's because I yearn for Monday so intensely that it just flies by when it finally gets here. I've paced around the house, around the studio, like a caged tiger, just waiting for the, you know, 7:06 p.m. Eastern. I hope you guys enjoy what we do. I hope you take something away from it that you can use. But there is no doubt you do a lot for me, and I did. God, I appreciate it. And for Agnes, yes, dear. And let's see, an email from our pal CB in California. She says, in reference to a new economic model, somebody's got to figure out how to protect the people, the worker, on a global scale. There's no turning back. Capitalism has to grow or it collapses, period. And she's right. Capitalism is contingent upon continued growth. It cannot grow within our borders anymore, period. American workers will have to chase jobs all over the planet. Property will come in wave patterns. Poverty will run in wave patterns. Globally, the poor will die. No way around it unless we can think up new things to sell, plug into the information technology boom. We have to live in camps. And there's a lot of scary truth in all of that. And I know a lot of people think, well, you know, this is a two-pronged problem, and it kind of is. But with this ports business, if you don't want the ports of the United States sold off to the United Arab Emirates, well, Bob, they're not really selling the port. Listen, we know what we're talking about here, okay? The operation of the ports. And it's just wrong on so many levels. You know, the Coast Guard will still be in charge of port security. Well, even so, doesn't that sort of predicate that the Coast Guard will be briefing the operators of the ports on their security actions? This is, you know, this is just some of the Bush administration's chickens coming home to roost. That's all it is. It's just the chickens coming home to roost. Since September 11th, well, and it wasn't even September 11th, since March of 2001, when the Bush administration, well, we've got to spend $3 billion on our Star Wars missile defense system, because otherwise that Kim Jong-porn, or whatever it is, he's working on nuclear death rays, and we have to be able to stop him with our missile defense system. It's been terror since the get-go. Not just, I mean, and everybody's forgotten because of the immensity of September 11th that there was other terror crap banging around out there that the Bush administration was trying to milk for all it was worth. But this is their chickens coming home to roost. I got to stop putting so dadgum much gin on the cornflakes. This is the chickens coming home to roost. They have done everything in their power to terrorize the American people. The number one terrorist on planet Earth is George W. Bush. Because you know what? A terrorist doesn't have to run around, with a dynamite garter belt on to do harm. It's the infusion. The terror is a mental state. It's not a physical fact. And when you're running for re-election, and 2 weeks before, you send your hitman, your Dick Cheney, out to, well, if you elect John Kerry, the terrorists win, they're gonna drop a bomb right on your front stoop. When you do that, and you do it day in and day out and day in and day out, this is what you're going to wind up with. You're going to wind up with a terrorized nation who looks up and they're selling the ports to who? No! The Obamas! Because we've been told for 4 or 5 years now that that's what Arabs do. They bomb you. You know, it astonishes me. Well, I don't know why they're amazed. So now, you know, this was the initial thesis. If you don't want this to go down, you Democrats, you progressives, you liberals, you decent Americans, you hardworking people carrying that 99.99th percentile on your freaking back. If you don't want it to go down, you better stand up and you better stand together, because the Republicans are wilting. Oh, God, like ice cream in the... They're melting like ice cream in the sun. I mean, they're disappearing like a spring snow. I'm supposed to be impressed with a news story. The Bush administration said on Sunday it would grant a request by Dubai Ports World for an additional 45-day review of its contested takeover of terminal operations at 6 major U.S. ports. Bug spray. I'm supposed to actually believe that Dubai Ports World said, oh my goodness, they're very, very upset, those Americans. We thought this was a job that they wouldn't do anymore. We need to ask George Bush to let us have a 45-day governmental review. Yes, sirree, that's what we need to do. Yesterday on one of the Sunday conservative blab fests, I don't know if it was this week with, you know, this week with the press, whatever. There was a Homeland Security White House spokes babe on there or some such who said, well, you know, we haven't heard anything about a request from Dubai Ports Limited. And then the next show, you've got John Warner from Virginia, the only guy who's behind this deal, who says, I have a letter here asking. What conclusion did we finally reach a couple of weeks ago? We're not talking about intelligent people. We're talking about incompetent oafs, fools, boobs, idiots. We're talking about people that could screw up a one-car funeral. That's what the... Where is it? Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist, a Tennessee Republican, had recommended the companies voluntarily seek an extended review. Yeah, voluntarily, my old Aunt Ethel. That was no more voluntary than conscription. This just it astonishes me. You know, how many people are willing to believe that Dubai Ports World requested of their own volition a 45-day additional review? And so what if they get it? You understand that this is Rovian politics at its very, very finest, don't you? This is Rovian politics fit to beat the band. This is where he calls all the little Republican senators together and says, listen, boys, get with the program or you're not with us. And we're going to give you some political cover. And we're going to tell you that, you know, we're going to review this for 45 days in order to give the Congress an opportunity to see what a really, really great, great deal this is after all. And that's where the Republicans, like I said before, that's where the Republicans melt like a spring snow and run away. And the only people that are going to be left to protect America are the same people who always protect America. Democrats, liberals, progressives, decent, upstanding Americans, for whom protecting America really matters, because they don't have a safety net. They don't have anywhere to run. They don't have anywhere to fall to. They don't have a chalet somewhere. They got one little house and their family in it. And if they can't protect that, they're done. done, and it is incumbent upon them to take care of America, and it's what they do. And you know what? If we fail in this, we will reap the whirlwind. Let's go to the phones. Wayne is with us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
Good, man, good. Listen, I think a lot of people don't notice, but I used to call you back when you weren't a worldwide host and things.
That's true.
And shortly after this man was reelected, I told you, well, now we get to sit back and watch him self-destruct.
Yep.
It hasn't been 16 months yet.
No. We're just passed month 13.
13?
Yeah.
Okay. They're doing a hell of a job. I got to commend them on that, man. I mean, this is one thing these people definitely do good.
Oh, they
self-destruct.
Yeah, they self-destruct with real restaurant quality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're excellent. Now, they really messed up on this porch thing. I mean, simply because.
Well, which part?
Well. From the beginning, I mean, it came, I don't even know, how come it came out? I don't even know why that happened.
Well, that was Russ Feingold, wasn't it?
I don't know. We'll have to look that up.
Yeah.
But it did come up. And, you know, like for years, these people have been, ever since 9/11, I mean, things have changed after 9/11. We have to take away some of your rights. We need more of your sons and daughters to send over there to die in this war. And, I mean, you know, it's we need to do this, you know. Then all of a sudden they turn around and tell us, but now it's really good if we let these Arabs or these people that are involved with Al-Qaeda, the only one of what, three countries that recognized Al-Qaeda?
The Taliban.
The Taliban.
Right.
And laundered
Al-Qaeda's money through their banking system.
And, you know, moved Bin Laden around so Clinton couldn't hit him with a cruise missile.
Correctly. Yeah, and something I learned last night, Wayne, that just made the little hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. One of the callers to Ben Burch's show, All Things Reconsidered, you know, one of our sister programs here.
Yes.
Pointed out the fact that the United Arab Emirates is still actively involved in the slave trade. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, somebody that comes over and works for low wages. I'm talking about you own their sorry hide. They are still actively involved in the slave trade.
Okay, and so they're, what I'm trying to tell you, how many, and I don't know if you ever knew about it, but the other night, when I called you and said I haven't spent a lot of my life worrying about ports.
Yeah.
Before all this happened, I would say that the majority of the American people never realized, one, that before this, a British company, well, I guess they still are, a British company was managing our ports. I mean, I never. And this isn't a British company. Or a Dubai. This is a country owned by the government.
Yeah, and please, I mean, you know, state owned or government owned. Can we engage in a little intellectual honesty on that point too, please, Wayne? When we say state owned or government owned, and we're talking about the United Arab Emirates, we're talking about one dude owned.
Oh, okay. I thought there was at least three of them.
Okay, maybe there's three. But, you know, there was Pompey, Crassus, and Caesar, and that was the triumvirate.
Yeah, well, exactly.
It's the same deal.
Exactly. And now all these, and I mean, man, they really got them lined up. All these corporate, I don't know what else, how to describe them, but they're fascists, you know.
Yeah, sure.
They're coming out, this is a good deal. You know the old saying, I don't know, what are they going on anything? You know, keep your friends close and your enemies even closer? Well, it's a little bit too damn close.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, and our friend David wrote in from Nashville to ask what happens 5 years ago when the Grand Fubar goes down in the United Arab Emirates and, you know, say, you know, Gaddafi says, well, you know, I'll buy that company.
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, this thing.
Because they weren't going to tell us about this deal, Wayne. You know, God only knows what they've sold them, who they've sold to.
How did this all first come out?
Well, unless somebody can straighten me up to the contrary, I honest to God believe that the first person who made a stink about it was Russ Feingold.
Well, we've got to find
And God
that
bless
out.
Him if he was. He sure looks presidential now.
But listen, you know, now I'm reading, people are sending me emails, well, the rest of the world is really disappointed because what are we doing? Oh, we're profiling. You know, we're profiling. Look, why shouldn't, I mean, I always assumed the longshoremen took care of the ports.
Well, I'll be honest, Wayne. I always thought, you know, when I think about a port, I think about a guy who sounds like you.
Yeah, well, and I mean, you know, them guys always, I thought they'd done a good job, and then I thought they were still there.
Yeah, I want them there.
No, I want them there, too.
You know.
And I don't want them just working there. I want them to run the things. I want Americans to run our ports.
You know, here's a crazy idea, and I mean, I'll probably get my Communist Party membership card out of this one. This is just crazy. How about we let the Longshoremen's Union run the ports?
Oh, my gosh.
Now, see?
Now you're really crazy.
Yeah, now, like I said, I'm gonna get my membership card out of that.
Well, this is absolutely, and you know, like if all the other countries are upset because we won't let you come over here and run our ports, I got news. Why don't you run your own ports? All you guys could run your own port. It's a different world now. You know,
it's a post 9/11 world. Sure,
I mean, we're at war.
Yeah, in a post 9/11 world, you can't let the enemy run your ports.
Oh, my God. I'm telling you what, they messed. I think this is really going to wake up the people. I mean, you know, they always run these billion-dollar deals and, oh, well, this is going to merge with that and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, fact of the matter is, you know, 30 years ago there were 50 oil companies. Now there's two. You know, that's hard for people. But this
they can...
somebody else managing our ports.
But you know what? We gotta stay on top of it, Wayne, because this deal was supposed to go down by March 6th, okay? This deal was supposed to go down by next Monday.
Yeah, I know. But
they've bought themselves 45 days in which to hopefully, you know, some white woman will be missing on an island somewhere or the lottery will go to 450 gajillion. To turn the American people's minds away from it. You know, maybe we'll go one trick pony on this show and talk about this ports deal every night for the next 45 days. I hope to hell somebody else will get on the wagon with us and do that, too.
Well, I do, too. And another thing, too, we got to find out, you know, a fine gold. It's the guy. We got to find out how he found out because Monkey Boy didn't even know.
Yeah.
I mean, he admitted that. He didn't know.
No, Rumsfeld didn't know. Peter Pace didn't know. You know, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff didn't know that the people that we... Oh, God, you know?
These people are crazy. Hey, Bush's approval rating's down to 34. And hopefully dropping. I would say it's dropping.
Jesus, you know? That's lower than the temperature outside my door right now.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
No, it couldn't. And, you know, what you're going to see is you're going to see that thing drop down till it's the absolute hardcores that are left. That's all.
Oh, well, I can't wait to make a local call here tomorrow to tell a guy about wonder how long he's going to hang in when he's going to jump ship. You're at 34. I'm betting on 29.
When it gets to 29, sell.
Right, yeah, he'll jump. Listen, I just wanted to say... one thing, Rich or Rick?
Rick.
Rick. Not only does George Bush not care about black people, George Bush don't care about any people.
Yeah, he don't think much of white people, neither.
No, he doesn't. No, that's exciting. Unless you got...
No, that's the thing, Wayne. He likes green people. Green people named Franklin and Jackson and Grant.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Yeah. And Papa Bush and Mama Bush and, you know...
Yeah.
Jackie Abramoff, you know, all them guys. But, you know, the rest of the people, he don't really care for you too damn much, to be honest.
I mean, I even think he took Ken Lay off the Christmas card list.
Well, I'm sure he did. He's denying knowing him, ain't he?
Yeah, well, Ken Lay, according to news reports, is now down to he's down to his last $500,000.
Oh, poor guy.
You know,
how many houses is he still on?
Well, he's living in one sad little apartment in Houston.
That's where he's living. How many does he own?
Yeah, I know. That's the chalet in Vail.
Story.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, when you put the question that way.
Yeah, right. You
know? Well, listen, man, I think, you know, we got to watch a steady decline here. You know, now we have to embolden the right Democrats and you know, pump them up here so that they can handle this thing. Because
yeah, and they got to stay on the ball here.
Well, you know, they're real good at blowing things now.
Yeah, they are. Well, I expected them to cave earlier when I heard that they were being racists and engaging in profiling. You know, that's usually enough to scare any good Democrat, had you know, halfway out of the county.
Well, you know, an expression that I absolutely hate, but one that the Republicans will understand, you know, we have to protect the homeland.
Yeah. That ought to work.
That could be their answer. And then tell them, shut up and get out of the way. We got to, you know. I mean, you know what starts here pretty soon, man, is who's going to clean up after the elephant.
Yeah, right.
And that is a big mess to clean up.
Oh, Lord. It's going to be huge.
Yeah.
And I, you know, some of this may be direct booby trapping of whoever the next poor sod is that gets into 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, Wayne.
Hey, well, that, you know, believe me, I don't doubt that a bit, but it has to be done.
It does. It does. All right. Thanks so much, man.
Okay, pal.
Talk to you later.
Yep. Bye.
Bye now. Okay, and let's see. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, more of your calls. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the beginning, back to when the earth, the sun, the stars, all align, 'cause perfect, living so perfect.
What's it like?
What's it like?
It's lonely.
It's really lonely.
I miss my brother.
I miss my brother.
I'm surrounded by other people, but it's not the same.
I've got other people around me, but it's not the same.
It's pretty scary, but I don't let it rattle me.
It's pretty scary around here, but I don't let it rattle me.
You always have to watch your back.
There's no one to watch my back.
I spend my whole day worried who's out to get me.
I'm always wondering who's out to get me.
But I can take care of myself.
But I can take care of myself.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
No matter what, I'll keep my head up.
It's not like I have a choice.
It's not like I have a choice.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
This'll all be over in 5 years, 3 months, and 17 days.
Go to jail for a gun crime and your family serves a sentence with you. Something to think about before committing a gun crime. Gun crimes hit home. This message brought to you by Project Safe Neighborhoods and the Ad Council.
Hello, may I help you?
Hello, can I ask a few questions about the apartment you have on Park Street?
What was your name?
My name is Juan Hernandez.
It's been rented.
Who is gone?
Hello?
Hello, my name is Sanjay Kumar. I am calling about the apartment on Park Street.
It's not available.
It's not available, but I just now saw it in the paper.
May I help you?
Hi, my name is Tyrone Washington. I'm calling about a place to rent on Park Street.
No longer available.
It's not available now.
Nope, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Hello?
Yes, hello. My name is Graham Wellington. I'm calling about the apartment for rent on Park Street. Is that still available?
Yes, it is.
Oh, it is?
Yes.
Oh, really? I'd love to make an appointment.
Housing discrimination is illegal. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing, it's not an option, it's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Okay, so we got a little less than an hour left. You heard the phone number. Email, by the way, bob@headonradio.com. Thanks to those of you who use that means of communicating as well. We're just trying to open this up for as many people as is humanly possible. Because when the day comes that progressive talk, progressive conversation, if you will, is prevalent as, say, right-wing hate radio, then you will begin to see a change in the tenor and the nature of this country. When people look from one to the other, and start talking about these issues in real in the real language of the extraordinary everyday human being American, then you'll see change. Because Wayne's right. Maybe we failed in our framing, or maybe we didn't just get it quite right in 2004. But this little hell of the Bush administration's own making, we can get this one right. We can absolutely get this one right, because when you look at the guy with the rust on his pickup truck and some peeling paint and whatnot, and you know he's probably still got payments on it. By the way, did you know that we can't even run our own ports anymore? That will resonate. That will absolutely resonate. Because odds are that guy knows somebody, has somebody in the family that has been touched by outsourcing. And now we're outsourcing the very means by which we bring things into this country. Nobody thinks about ports. Port Authority of New York. It was the Port Authority police who took such a beating on September the 11th, 2001. We weren't thinking about the fact that some other company, some other country's company, was running our ports. It is literally unthinkable. It does. We think about our ports. What the hell's wrong with letting the longshoremen run the ports, honest to God? I mean, these guys know what runs the gantries that takes the containers off the container ships. These guys are associated and affiliated with the guys who run the tugboats. Because you don't just bring one of these container ships in and just cruise up to the port and all stop number one. No, these things have to be eased home. And it's not just container ships. One of the things that's on the block is the cruise ship Port of Manhattan. Never been there, but the island's not that freaking big. You didn't like 9/11? Wait till you see what happens when when the people that we don't trust can get on the Carnival Princess or whatever and cruise a dirty bomb into the Port of Manhattan. And there's nothing, no, I'm not buying that Republican crap. There's nothing racist or profiling in that. This is about homeland security. They want to play that game? By God, we'll let them. But we have let them, but we're going to make them continue to play that game. I tell you what, I'm blabbing. Let's go to the phones. Bob is with us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. There you are.
Did I really get it?
Pardon?
Did I really get an email?
Yes, you did, from Andrew in New York.
Well, Andrew, my respect to him, my goodness gracious, that he would play my...
Yeah, says he rewinds the archives.
Anyway, I have a challenge, not a challenge, no, I do enough challenging. I have a request.
Okay.
To all those that want to know where the Vietnam vet has gone. Why are there more Vietnam vets out here doing all this stuff?
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
I heard that the other night. And I want them to fire up their computers, okay?
Uh-huh.
And go to Powder Burns, P P-O-W-D-E-R Burns, B-U-R-N-S.
Okay, Powder Burns. Powderburns.org.
Yeah. And they'll find out what the Vietnam vets been doing for a long time. These are people that I know.
Well, you know, that's interesting you should raise that point, Bob, because I was, from time to time, I go and I read Stars and Stripes.
Mm.
And I read a letter very similar to that in the letters to the editor section of that fine publication. And it was a fellow saying, you know, I was drafted in 1968. You want to know where the Vietnam vet is? The Vietnam vet, his butt is in Iraq right now. He said, I'm 56 years old, and I wear unit patches older than most of the guys I'm serving with.
Yeah, yeah. But, see, there's this myth about us that we just faded away or something. I don't know. I mean, we were disrespected when we came home. Most of us that actually did what we thought was right for the country found out that we were doing it for the wrong people, not for the wrong reason. Okay?
Yeah.
Like my friend Salerno did, you know?
Yeah.
We did what we believed, what our fathers taught us, and for the red, white, and blue, and what was good in America, but America has gone somewhere else. It's lost its direction, or it's lost its connection. I think it's more connection with where we came from and our forebears, our fathers, our forefathers. And, you know, can you have forefathers? I didn't know you could have. That's an old joke.
Yeah.
That goes back to, Arnie, when he was trying to be a kindergarten teacher, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, giving you up. Well, you know, hey, see, everything has to be bigger than life. It's got to be on the big screen or on the what do they call them now? They got these new things coming out. They're widescreen.
High definition.
Yeah, HD. Okay, that's like. You got double D's.
Yeah.
And Agnes would know what double D's are. Okay. And, okay. And most of the girls do.
Sure.
But
a lot of the guys.
Hey, you see, it's always got to be bigger than life. Why can't it just be real life and what real people have experienced, and then realize that the people that are sitting up there now, none of them, not one of them, has really engaged in the struggle. The only thing they've engaged in is skullduggery and greed. And
well, and their definition of struggle, Bob, is to try to bring in another, you know, $15,000 worth of campaign contributions by, you know, day after tomorrow.
Yeah. Well, if you go to powderburns.org, you can punch up a button that says the Bush indictment, okay?
Yeah.
And you will see how connected the Bush administration, all the way back to Pappy or Poppy Bush, I guess you call him Poppy Bush because he's king of opium, goes. The whole cabal, they're all involved in poisoning our children. They've been poisoning them with cocaine and with heroin and
crack and meth and
but
you know the poisoning runs deeper than that, Bob.
I know it does.
Because the poisoning, you know, you talk about why has it got to be bigger? Why has it got to be more immediate? Why has it got to be super duper? That's a form of poisoning of the American people too, and it has to do with what the Republicans have done, Bob, is to tell ordinary Americans that what I call extraordinary Americans that they're not good enough. You know, you're not rich enough. You need to vote Republican so you can be richer. You know, your life isn't happy enough. You know, it's the what you're doing for your family isn't good enough. You've got to have it's this nasty Calvinist approach. That's mixed up with ugly politics. And I resent it. I resent it because, you know, I grew up with those salt of the earth types, and they did work hard, and they do work hard, and they deserve everything that they get. And the one thing they don't need is some politician or some religious monster tell them, you know, you don't love Jesus enough. There's not a big enough rock in your school building. You haven't ceded enough of your personal sovereignty to this corporation or that polluter. I despise them for it, Bob.
You know, it all goes back to that one most vile thing that's ever been perpetrated on the American people. It goes right back to that thing. I can remember as a kid, we used to listen to the radio. And we used to, you know, because that's all we had, you know. And we get the voices from, you know, around the world, like Edward R. Murrow, okay, talking about events as they were happening. And you didn't visualize them, you didn't see them. I mean, you didn't have that poison in your mind. You had your mind to visualize it, and you had to use your mind in order to do it. Okay?
Yeah.
But, oh, goodness, back in the 50s, they came up with this terrible device. They stuck it in your house. You turn it on every morning, and you got your plop, plop, this is, oh, what a relief it is.
And the next thing you know, you're a robot.
Yeah, it was always that. And it just, you know, it was these jingoistic, kind of just little 30-second ads that would make you feel like, oh, goodness, he's a uniter, not a diviner. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's always a little 30-second or 20-second, because that's all your brain can handle anymore. You don't have to listen to the Lone Ranger and Tonto and all the escapades and visualize it in your mind, okay? And,
yeah.
You know, here some time ago, I had this thought go through my mind of the Lone Ranger and Tonto riding across the plains, and they're being chased by a group of American aboriginals, you know, and they come to the edge of a cliff. Let's call it the Grand Canyon, okay?
Yeah.
And the Lone Ranger looks at Tonto and he says, "Tonto, what are we gonna do?" And Tonto looks him right in the eyes and says, "What do you mean, we, white man?" The idea is this, you know, we the people, you know, if we look them right in the eye and say, "What do you mean, we, white man?" Because they don't look at
Yeah,
us.
What do you mean, we, rich man?
Yeah, rich man, white, well, gay, white, fat man, fat white man, or ugly white man, because, you know, it doesn't matter. If they have that idea of the separation of we the people, to separate us, divide us, split us down the middle, try to break us up from our brothers. I got Andrew in New York just calling and listening to my voice and thinking, this is a man that I would be proud to call a brother, you know?
Right.
And
that's what we're fighting, Bob. We're fighting everything that the current power elite has in their hand is predicated on keeping us separated from one another. And it's not necessarily racial or ethnic or it is economic, it is monetary, but you know they want us living in those mixed suburbs where you live in a house that's 3 feet away from the next house to you, and you know you never know your next door neighbor until you see him carrying him out on a gurney. That's what they want. Well, we got to get out of here, Bob. We're on top of a break.
I'm sorry.
Oh, don't apologize. Thanks for the many good thoughts.
I just got lost in a thought there.
No, that's no, you didn't. You didn't. You did a great job, and it's well right. It's well worth the consideration.
No. Just, you know, the argument is about ports and about this and about that and the other, but if we the people bring it together as not as individuals, but as a nation, okay?
Yeah, as a people.
You know, that's what beat Custer.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
That's what beat Custer, a nation that came together.
That's right. All right. Thanks, Bob. We got to hit it. Take care.
Good night.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right, then. 20 past the hour. Let's take that break. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
Everyone loves to listen to music, but have you ever stopped to think about why it's great for kids to learn to play music? Hi, I'm Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish. These days it seems people focus way too much on the economics of school music instead of an amazing positive effect it has on kids. It's such a thrill for a child when he or she gets the first instrument or masters a simple part on the flute or performs a showstopper with a school chorus. And there's so much music out there to play and listen to. When kids learn to appreciate a show tune, a Beethoven symphony, or an opera, in addition to what they hear on the radio, it only opens their young minds to the diversity of the world around them. Make sure your kids learn to love music. Support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, and the National Anthem Project, the campaign to restore America's voice through music education. March is Music in Our Schools Month.
Speaking of thievery,
yes.
Just want to let you know that Alistair Cook, okay, last year, right?
Yes.
He died of lung cancer that spread to his bones. He was 95 years old. Apparently, his bones have been or were stolen. Apparently, there's a ring of people out there that steal bones. They steal these bones and they make dental implants. Apparently, now he had cancer all in his bones, right? But the people who stole the bones rewrote the paperwork to make it look like he died of a heart attack. So now there's somebody else walking around out there with his diseased, cancerous bones in their body.
That is freaky.
Yeah, I just thought it was so...
oh my God.
I thought it was so ghoulish.
It just freaks me out. Anyway...
Hey, don't forget to join Bruce and I Saturday, 10 p.m. Eastern Time for the next edition of Fourth Estate Radio. Get the streaming details at fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Some for the little lady, $3-4. We got year-end clearance. We got our white sale and the smoke-damaged furniture you can drive it away today.
Act now. Yes, Lord, yes.
Act now. And receive as our gift. Our gift to you. They come in all colors.
25 minutes past the hour. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On a Monday night. And the phone number is 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. Bob at headonradio.com is the email address. Get in on the conversation. In fact, our buddy Chris in Alabama is with us. Hey, Chris, you're Head On.
Smell like a brewery, look like a tramp. You probably want me to do all that, do you?
No, let's don't.
Okay, well, if you go to YouTube.com and type in Tom Waits, you can see him doing that with just a timpani drum.
Oh, really?
And, oh, my goodness, it's incredible.
Oh, I love that. I love that piece.
Okay.
That's the world. That's the entire failure of American capitalism contained in one song.
You better believe it. Sharing his apartment with a telephone pole.
Yep.
DP World.
Yeah.
The number two man, Edward H. Bilkey, the guy you've heard in the news all this time lately.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it says on the website, he's retiring.
Really?
Boy, don't you bet there's a good old lobbying job for him.
No, well, you know, apparently you don't even have to go to the lobbying job. There's another guy that's the manager of European and Latin American operations for DP World, and he's becoming chairman or commissioner or whatever of the United States Maritime Commission.
Oh, yeah.
Appointed by Bush and everything. You know, got the Holy Writ and what have you.
Operating out of Kinlay's apartment. Okay, sharing his apartment. Okay. The number two man, the number four man, George Dalton, the general counsel.
George Dalton, that doesn't sound like a very Arabic name.
No, let's see, the number two man's American, the number four man's American, the number six man's American. Edward Bilkey, he's a Yale man.
Well, of course.
Of course. He also went to the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy. Now, that just sends chills.
Yeah.
Okay. On a blogger's whim, I emailed the head of business development for that corporation.
Did you really?
Matt Leach.
Okay.
You ain't going to believe this.
Wrote back?
He wrote me back.
Bless my hide. Sometimes they do, Chris.
I asked him about his bio. Now, in his bio, there is a little paragraph that says, prior to joining Sealand, that's the part of the company that he was first with.
Right.
He held progressive positions in the commercial real estate group of a large financial institution based in Washington, D.C.
Okie dokie. If you say BCCI, I'm opening the window and running away, okay?
Oh, this gets better. So I wrote him. I said, could you please tell me the real estate group you work for in Washington, D.C.? Your bio does not list this information. Now, this either sounds like a cross between a politician's answer and a spook's answer. All right. I'm asking about the real estate group you work for in Washington.
Right.
I work in commercial real estate financing for what was a large regional bank lending in the Middle Atlantic. That bank was acquired during the major bank consolidations in the early 90s. I did not work for an independent real estate group.
I'll be damned.
Don't that sound...
Okay, this is the paranoid tinfoil helmet portion of the program. That sounds like BCCI.
Yeah, it sure does. There is
wait. I mean, let's go ahead and flesh it out for folks a little bit, Chris.
Yeah.
What was BCCI involved in? weren't they up to their ugly little hairy knuckles in the financing the terrorists and
yep.
all manner of filth in the Middle East and
yep.
The occasional Colombian drug runner.
When the Bank of Dubai first opened, it operated on no interest. And that's when Bin Laden first got into business with them. They were doing
this just,
with no interest.
This just stinks all the way to the ground.
I'm reading, I guess you saw my email, I'm reading
yeah.
Peter Bergen's book, Holy War, Inc. Folks, I tell you what, I've only talked about one book on this show, and that's been a while back. It was called Chatter.
Yeah.
Now, that book, some of your listeners got a hold of that book, and it scared the crap out of them.
That's right.
Holy War, Inc. is the next one I'm going to talk about.
Is that one of the, is that another one of those for the cold sweats at 3 a.m.?
It is cold sweats in the mid-afternoon.
Oh, man. Peter...
Bin Laden is doing all of this not out of hatred. He's doing it out of revenge.
Well, you know, I mean, revenge, and of course, those of us who have watched our fair share of Star Trek movies know that revenge is a dish that is best served cold.
Oh, man. Speaking of Star Trek, I was watching an episode of Star Trek today where Moriarty comes back, and he's able to leave the holodeck and walk out into the ship. And, man, I tell you, I got this image of Moriarty coming to life as a real person, coming and being born as Karl Rove.
Well, you know, I've got a Karl Rove story in here tonight, Chris. You know that Hillary fired a little shot at him today.
Oh yeah, he obsesses about me.
Yeah, you know the next thing, and the thing is, I mean, he's just that way. He's that little geeky sort of fella that you know girls wouldn't talk to him in third grade, and he'd like leave him a half-eaten apple and stuff like that. I mean, that's Karl Rove.
Yeah, I see you have an apple. Well, I've got a worm for it.
Yeah, I see you're going to get me in trouble.
And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that as in a chilling way.
But I mean, he is, and that's. But I mean, it's not just Karl Rove. It's all of the Republican machine. I think they've got a terrible, terrible crush on Hillary.
They do.
And it's. I mean, this is like stalker level stuff. You know, I mean, this is like where they go to bed listening to Sting singing Every Breath You Take, you know. Now, these people, this is not healthy.
No. This quote, I've also recently read a book on Teddy Roosevelt about his trek into Africa,
mm-hmm.
The journey up the river. This sounds so much like 9/11. It's written by Teddy Roosevelt. The day was overcast and the air was heavy with vapor. Ahead of us, the shrouded river stretched between dim walls of forest half seen in the mist. Boy, it's amazing how you can take something out of context.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. Now, the book you mentioned earlier, Holy War, Inc., right?
Yeah, it's by Peter Bergen.
Bergen, is that B-E-R-G-E-N?
Yeah. Yeah, you've seen him on CNN and 60 Minutes and
right.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
He is the knowledge expert on Bin Laden.
A fairly recent release?
Yeah. Well, it's out in paperback now, so it's cheaper. That's why I've got it.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, I've got about half the book underlined.
Wow.
It's chilling. And there's a... I don't have it in front of me at the moment, but that quote that I put in that piece I wrote recently...
Mm-hmm.
About the video someone
right.
showed him with the car going inside the green zone and right up, traveling by all these Americans and going right up next to a woman pushing a baby in a stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, look at all these infidels on our land. Well, we're welcoming. Our ports are open.
Yeah.
There's no understanding of it.
No
way you can conceive of it. And this has been allowed to happen.
They need it, Chris. They need it. Those ports... Now, this must be contagious. Those ports are absolutely the key to the next 9/11.
Absolutely. You know, where would his legacy be if he didn't have another one?
Well, wait a minute. Denzel Washington starred in it. Tom Clancy movie, Baltimore got blown up.
Yeah.
What was that, Sum of All Fears?
No, that was Morgan Freeman and...
Oh, Morgan Freeman. That's what I'm thinking
Baltimore
of.
Yeah, Baltimore got blew up, yeah.
Well, you know, that's how that happens. Mm. You know, it's not Saddam on a little blow-up rubber ducky raft.
Yeah, that movie was a drink machine. It was a soda machine.
Yeah. And you can get a lot of soda machines inside those containers, can't you?
Well, this could be a Toys for Tots container.
Well, sure. To go back to some of the stuff you were talking about, you know, this guy's a ranking officer of Dubai Ports,
yeah.
blah 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 blah. You gave me two or three Americans.
I sure did. I gave you three.
Yeah, I'm wondering, you know, I'm just wondering, you know, this is state-owned. This is a state-owned corporation of Dubai, which means...
Edward Bilkey, an American, the one who's been shepherding this deal. George Dalton, general counsel, their lawyer is an American. Head of business development. Now, we all know what that means.
Yeah.
Matt Leach, American. Leach. Oh, boy.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is... There's got to be some sort of shady dealings involved for three Americans. But see, Americans like that, they don't think of themselves as Americans, Chris.
Well, I've got one more thing, and I'll leave you with. Now, anybody that has flipped by one of these entertainment shows might know that off the coast of Dubai, they are creating man-made islands.
Yes, they are. One of them
for sale to the highest bidder in the shape of the globe. Who? It's been buying most of these islands, American celebrities. So are they going to use? We should all email all these American celebrities and ask them if they're going to do sponsors for Dubai, especially when, you know, we get attacked and it's going to be on their watch. Or are they going to be going, you know, this person paid $5,000 for this bottle of Cristal and they drank it on this island while we were being defumigated or something over here?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you've got, I went to that one website, Chris, where the people, you know, the people there write poetry about their dear dictators.
Yeah.
You know,
that line from West Wing, you campaign on poetry and govern on prose?
Well, yeah. Yeah. But the thing is, I would be as concerned about this deal if it was the Japanese, if
Absolutely.
It was the French, if it was the Russians, if it was the Israelis, our closest friends on God's sweet little blue green marble, the Israelis. If the Israelis wanted to run our ports, I would be unhappy with this deal.
We had a war called the American Revolution.
Yeah, so that nobody...
What was that all about?
Well, it was about the ports, Chris, for God's sakes.
That's exactly right.
It was about the ports because, I mean, the British had New York Harbor bottled up. They had Boston bottled up. They had Charleston bottled up.
Absolutely.
The American Civil War, you know, Mobile Bay, Charleston, again.
Absolutely.
Everything, American security, you know, despite all this happy horse crap that George Bush puts out, the oceans no longer protect us, you know.
Well, I'm faulting quite a few Democrats as well. If they don't, they say, well, we need to look into this, we need to do this,
No, we don't need to look into this, we need to stop this.
We need to stop it, and if all you're going to do is get in front of the cameras on the steps with your... coat off and your shirt sleeves rolled up, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, and 45 days from now, I don't want to see Joe Lieberman standing on the steps of the Senate saying, well, we have looked into this, and it appears to be an okay deal, so American security is defended again, and the homeland is secure. I don't want to hear that. I don't want this 45 days
what
to be used as some sort of political cover, and that's what it's designed to be.
What translates into, look, you're nowhere near what we are. You don't know what we know. Just shut up and let us do what we're doing.
Yeah, because we know what's better for you peasants.
Exactly. Peasants, yeah, there you go.
You know, you serfs, you villains. You know, I don't know. I wish I lived nearer a port. I would go out and buy the. You go to Dollar General or Family Dollar or whatever, and you can buy boxes of tea for a dollar. I'd spend $50 for a case of that stuff, and just walk to my nearest harbor and dump it in ceremonially. You know.
Let's go across the fields to the priest and let him tell us what the Bible says. Let's watch 60 Minutes the other night, and the whole case is being made for. Now, look, these people inspecting these things aren't bad. These people doing this, people protecting our things aren't bad. What we got to worry about is the rent-a-cops that don't get paid anything getting a payoff. That's the only thing they talked about. We got to watch for the little stupid people that make hourly pay getting paid off. So it's the hourly people that are crooked.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's always the workers' fault.
It's always the workers' fault. You know?
I despise them for it, Chris. I truly do.
You know, it's like these problems. Oh, I've got to call you back another night. I want to know your opinion on what's going on in Colorado, and that Montana with the open mining I'm making the coal into the fuel.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've got it. Yeah, that's Brian Schweitzer. That's the erstwhile Democratic governor of Montana saying, you know, that he just wants to destroy a third of Montana to turn turn Montana's coal into diesel fuel. Yeah, screw him. Screw him and his coal diesel. I don't care if he is a Democrat. We can make a hell of a lot more diesel out of French fry oil than we can
out
of his coal.
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking, you know, it's going to be a lot safer to mine and everything. And when I first heard it, I thought, well, you know, not having some of these people in cave-ins would be good. And then the more they talked about it, and I thought, well, you know what? You know, this has been around a lot longer, and it's stuff grown on top of the land and not in it.
Well, and the thing is, that part of Montana, if I understand my geography correctly, Chris, that's not where you take the top off a mountain. That's where you sort of, those are literally pits. Monstrous, mm-hmm. monstrous pits, and it destroys, you know, for the cattlemen or the sheepers or whatever, the people who are trying to, you know, raise living things out there, it destroys their groundwater.
Yeah. But the first thing I thought of when I saw the cattlemen on there talking, I thought, well, you know, these cattlemen may be, you know, just billionaires grabbing about now, but it'll make more money. But for every four billionaire out there cattle grazing just to suit them, there's a bunch of people out there doing it to survive.
Yeah, right, and I can't imagine that the cattlemen out west would tolerate this being done to the groundwater supply.
There's another thing there. I wanted a West Virginian's opinion, because who knows more about this being screwed over by
by the company. Oh, God. Thanks so much, Chris. We got to roll on, brother.
All right. Take care.
All right. Later. And let's see. One quick last break, and then we'll take it home for the evening. Last chance to get your licks in if there's a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle. You know the drill. 877-443-2366 is the number. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The Democratic Party keeps moving closer and closer to where the Republican Party is in order to try to win elections. And I've watched how Democrats have consistently become more and more disgusted with the National Party because of the fact that they keep doing this. To no surprise, what did I find when I opened up the Washington Post? Senator Clinton crafts vague stance on war with eye to 2008. Senator Clinton, get a clue and, you know, get a backbone, for God's sake. You know, stand up and stand for something. I guess that's what really gets to me worse than anything, you know, anything else, is that when I vote for a leader, I want that leader to say to me, this is not a popular stand, and I understand this. This stand that I'm taking is going to polarize a lot of people, but you know what? I believe in what I'm doing, you know, and I will do what I can to carry it through regardless of my political future. This is Bruce Birch. I'd like to invite you to join me for All Things Reconsidered this Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern. For connection information, visit allthingsreconsidered.org. That's allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's Grace.
We're actually very boring people, Rama. That's why we call ourselves homebodies.
Well, it's Rama.
Sure. I mean, you know, group sex for us is when we're both involved.
That's a
It's really, really smart.
We're a nice little Petri dish here in Vermont, because you can experiment.
Join Grace and Rama, homebodies, every Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the web at homebodies.ramabahama.net.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work.
Time traveling. Like being 16 again. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. 14 minutes before the hour. Let's do a little, cleaning up of the stack of stuff I didn't get to. Okay. 17 arrested at Florida neo-Nazi rally. That would be Jeb Bush's Florida. Where the neo-Nazis get to march through predominantly black neighborhoods. No members of the neo-Nazi group were arrested, police said, because they're just so doggone well-behaved, those Nazis. Ugh. And, you know, we talked a little bit, made some mention of it in the last couple of shows last week, I think. This abortion ban that cruised, you know, it was like it was on rails. Went through the South Dakota legislature like through a goose. Yeah. If you go and you do any reading on this at all, it's truly Alice down the rabbit hole stuff. You know who was fighting? I mean, sometimes I don't know where I live anymore. There were actually Republicans opposed to this bill. Because, of course, this bill says, hey, little girl, did Uncle Daddy rape you? You have to have the baby. I mean, that's how profoundly hateful this South Dakota bill is. But there were Republicans who opposed it, but that's not what I want to talk about. I want to bring to your attention. I want to bring to your attention part and parcel of some of the problems that we face as a party. Now, you know, I've said it a million times, I don't have time to get involved with a third party because I can't make a promise to my kids that the damn thing will be viable, by the time they've got grandchildren. This is not a country where third parties work. I mean, if you absolutely want one, register as a third party candidate and run for city council or something like, build the pyramid from the bottom up and tell your great grandchildren that you started it because maybe by then, they will have gotten their way up to the point where they get a governor. Now, the Democratic Party is what we got to fix. And that's why I came back to this South Dakota abortion ban story. Because I want to tell you about somebody. Her name is Julie Bartling. B-A-R-T-L-I-N-G. Julie Bartling. Her husband is a, how shall we put this? He's a big wig in South Dakota. Business circles of sorts, farming, trucking, hauling, that kind of stuff. But Julie Bartling said,
in my opinion, it is the time for this South Dakota legislature to deal with this issue and protect the rights and lives of unborn children. There is a movement across this country of the wishes to save and protect the lives of unborn children.
Julie Bartling is a Democrat.
Boo.
Yeah, boo, hiss. Julie Bartling needs to be run out of the Democratic Party. South Dakota National. She's a Lieberman Democrat, okay? Here's a little bio on her. With 28 years of experience in farming, office management, and government, Senator Julie Bartling of Burke, South Dakota, was recently hired to take charge of events and special projects of the South Dakota Farmers Union Foundation. Yada, 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 yada. She also received an appointment by President George W. Bush to serve on the board of directors of the Federal Agriculture Mortgage Corporation, also known as Farmer Mac. She is a Quisling. She is a Vichy Democrat. And she hates her own gender. Can you imagine that? She hates her own gender. You know, the Republican Senator Stan Adelstein of Rapid City, South Dakota, tried to amend the bill to at least include an exception for abortions for victims of rape. He was beaten 21-14 on that amendment for rape. Quote, to require a... It's because the woman always... she shouldn't be dressing that way or walking that way. He said, Republican Senator Stan Adelstein of Rapid City, a Republican, said, to require a woman who has been savaged to carry the brutal attack result is a continued savagery unworthy of South Dakota. You know, my God, that's where Mount Rushmore is, right? And then Republican Senator Lee Schoenbeck of Watertown objected and said the amendment is unfair to some equally innocent souls who have no chance to stand and defend themselves. Dude, Mr. Schoenbeck, buddy, there are, like, legends that go all the way back in the history of this nation, not this nation, this world, this planet, this culture, this human culture, about what happened, you know, I mean, the bad things, you know, and people who come to the end of their lives with swords pointed at their bellies going, would that I had never been born. That's that incest child, that's that rape child. But worst of all, Senator Julie Bartling of Burke, who voted against every woman in South Dakota of childbearing age, who voted against every victim of rape. I'd say there's probably an incest case or two brought in South Dakota every year, wouldn't you bet? And voted again. Can you imagine? Ladies, need some help here. We're late in the show. Maybe we'll carry this over to tomorrow. Ladies, what do you think of Senator Julie Bartling, who says that a little 13-year-old girl who's been incestuously raped has to carry the child to term? What do you think of that woman, if you can call her that? If you, by the way, if you would like to let Senator Julie Bartling know, politely, of course, what you think of her activities, try BART, the numeral 6, BART 6, at GW, can't read my own writing, GWTC.net. BART6 at GWTC.net. Maybe you could gently suggest that she get the heck out of the Democratic Party. We don't need that kind of Democrat anymore. We don't need that, you know, that's the same kind of Democrat that we had back in, say, 1858, who said, well, you know, Jesus said it's all right to own a Negro. Slavery is the natural order of the Bible. It is ordained by God. That's the same kind of mindset, okay? It's the same mindset. It's the ownership society. Well, you know, closer kin, deeper in. Oh, that's just sick. No, that's... And again... This isn't a women's rights issue. This is a human rights issue. And we don't need members of the Democratic Party who will not stand up for human rights. Clear enough? I should think. So that's it for tonight. Thank you to everyone who participated in Conversation Radio, either by listening or by emailing or by calling the program. You sure do make it a lot of fun. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. It was announced by Brian Reznor and engineered by Randy Kerbway. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream of this program, as well as the archives of this show and many, many other fine liberal talk programs. He's got a fundraiser going on. Do the right thing by Ben, because he's never going to bother you by sending you a bill. And, of course, this show simply would not happen without the kind, dedicated, and far-sighted support of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Truly, they are building the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.